97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
The fact that these people are accusing him of a stage-managed thing, of course the president has to have security because there have been two attempts on his life in the last 8 weeks. He can't just walk into a McDonald's and you know, sign a W-9 and actually go on the payroll. That's just not how this works, especially given the security threats on his life. But look, he was interacting with people. He was talking to the employees. He was giving people food. And he was just being, I think, what he does best, which is just being among the people, talking to them about what they care about. He showed, I think, genuine interest in the employees and their lives and where they came from and what they were actually doing in their job. And that's something you can't stage and you can't fake. That is just the genuine person that Donald Trump is. And it's why I think a lot of working people, even though, of course, he's a successful real estate billionaire, have this emotional connection to Donald Trump. You can't make up that kind of connection. Unfortunately, Kamala Harris has tried and failed. And I think it's why her campaign is flailing a little bit right now, is because, yeah, she goes into Sheetz and does four takes of her buying Doritos. Donald Trump just goes into McDonald's and he is who he is and people love him.
J.D. Vance, the vice presidential candidate on the Trump-Vance ticket, talking a little bit about Donald Trump's effort to go work in a McDonald's yesterday and bring attention to local businesses, big franchises, local businesses, and the importance of those jobs. And we ask our friend Steve Moore to weigh in on that, among other things. Steve Moore is a distinguished fellow in economics at the Heritage Foundation, as well as a Trump economic advisor. And he's author of the book Govzilla, How the Relentless Growth of Government is Devouring Our Economy and Our Freedom. Steve, welcome back to the show. Thanks for being here today.
Hi, Annie. Actually, I have my new book just came out last week. It's
Perfect.
Called The Trump Economic Miracle. And it is about the superior record of Trump to Biden and Harris on almost every single measurement. And, you know, how Trump did it in his first term and how he'll do it in his second term. So I hope people will get that. We're number one on Amazon Business and Economics, and Trump gave a shout-out last week on the book.
Yeah, The Trump Economic Miracle. We'll absolutely check that out. You'll be happy and proud of me, Steve. I was checking out your hotline in my email today, and it was the fourth point that is listed there is talking about how the real median earnings are still down under Biden. These people who work at McDonald's, the people who work in barbershops, the people who work, I'm just thinking of several of the places that Donald Trump has frequented here as of late, are really, really being pressured under a tough economy with median, real median wages still being down under the Biden-Harris campaign. I'm wondering what your thoughts are on the, you know, middle class worker, how they're faring right now and how they would fare if Donald Trump became the president.
Well, this explains why it is that Trump has surged into the lead. And the base is that, you know, Kamala, did you notice she couldn't name a single thing she'd do differently than Biden?
Yeah.
So, you know, you're going to get, if you want four more years of this, then you should vote for Kamala Harris. But Trump is going to get us back to the prosperity we had when he was president. And, you know, he's going to lower taxes. We're going to produce more energy. We're going to deregulate the economy. We're going to have better trade deals. We're going to build pipelines and things like that that we need to, you know, secure our energy independence. So a lot of the stuff is just common sense that makes an economy grow. And Kamala doesn't understand economics because she's never actually there's a big dispute now about whether she actually worked for McDonald's. You know, she said she worked there for 1 year, but the McDonald's people have no record of that. By the way, what kind of a lowlife actually lies on their resume about working at McDonald's?
Yeah, such a bizarre thing for her to claim. Yeah. Steve Moore speaking with us right now. I hear a lot about...
By the way, Donald Trump has worked at McDonald's because he worked there yesterday.
Yes, he did. It was quite something to see him work in that fryer. That was wild.
The way, you know, he just has a way of... He just understands middle-class, working-class people. And the way he was dealing with people, you know, when they drove up, it was just very... People should watch it on the video on YouTube because it's an amazing video. You know, Trump just has a way of, even though he's a very rich man himself and an incredibly successful businessman, he understands blue-collar workers. And, you know, I've been around him quite a bit over the last 8 or 9 years, and I've just noticed the way he treats people, whether the people he works for him or the Secret Service people or the service people at, the restaurants he goes to or the hotels. And he treats everybody with dignity. And you know, he asks about how they're doing, and you know, it just means a lot to people. He has the common man's touch.
Yeah, I was gonna ask you. You've kind of answered this question, but you know, he acknowledges the blue collar worker. He certainly has a lot of support of the union members that are out there. Maybe not every union from the top, but
he's gonna win the union vote. He will be the first Republican in a long time to win the union vote because they realize that the union leaders don't always represent their political views, and they're most Americans are generally pretty conservative, you know, in terms of how they view the world. Not everybody's conservative or moderate, but most Americans are not far left. And Kamala, I want people to remember, if you're undecided, Kamala had a more liberal voting record than Bernie Sanders in the Senate. So she is no moderate. She's a far left winger.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. I mean, I think that when it comes to the union workers and it comes to the people who, you know, are middle class or maybe are starting out in their career and maybe they do work at McDonald's or whatever it might be, there is this facade that has been created in cases Donald Trump by the media that has been in play since 2015. They've worked very hard to create a caricature of a man, and that's the person who has had to run for these for the president of the United States. And it feels like this time around, and I think, Steve Moore, that it's because of where it hits people in the pocketbook, that they are stopping believing the spoon-fed narrative of who Donald Trump is because they've seen what these years of the Biden-Harris administration is doing to their ability to make and keep their own money, that they're starting to think for themselves a little bit more than usual and maybe trust that Donald Trump's the right person, especially for the economy.
Well, that's certainly what the polls are now showing and the betting markets are showing, that there's been about a 6-point switch in just the last 2 or 3 weeks. And remember, Annie, when Kamala was announced as the Democratic nominee, without getting a single vote, by the way, you know, there was this love affair by the media. And, you know, she zoomed into the lead and she was treated like Mother Teresa, for goodness sakes. And now people are taking a look. I mean, Trump has a very good ad up in Virginia, where I live, which is a battleground state. And it just says, you know, it's just one example. I mean, this is a woman who voted to use public taxpayer funds for sex change operations for criminals in jail.
It's wild.
I mean, you couldn't make that up.
It's like a jackpot.
I mean, what kind of lunatic is for that?
Yeah, completely. I wanted to ask you one last question. We want to make sure we respect your time here. We're speaking with Steve Moore. He's a distinguished fellow in economics at the Heritage Foundation, also a Trump economic advisor. This idea that we keep hearing, Trump insults Kamala Harris's plan to always tax the rich, tax the rich, tax the rich. Two-part question for you. Is that the Kamala Harris plan? And secondly, who does Kamala Harris consider to be rich?
Yeah, great point. So, you know, we have a new report on our unleashprosperity.com website that shows, you know, that half of the income tax are paid by the people in the top 1%. So the rich do pay a lot of taxes in this country. But there's no question that her tax policies would very dramatically affect middle class people, because she wants to get rid of the Trump tax cut. And the average American saved about $2,500 a year on their taxes, you know, in that plan. So if you erase the tax cut, you're effectively raising anybody want to pay $2,500, $50 a week more in taxes? If you do, you know, Kamala Harris is your person. Trump is going to cut taxes for everyone. Everyone is going to get a tax cut, including, don't forget, no tax on tips.
Yeah. He's thrown a lot of things in the no tax category. Overtime, all of that stuff. I know he's got a lot of ideas and he's been pushing them out there. Kamala Harris has been taking a few of those for her own campaign.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, we're going to down to the wire. It is going to be a close race. And that's why, by the way, I mentioned my book at the start, Trump Economic Miracle, because, you know, you can just go to Amazon and get it for, I think, like $14.95. But if you know people are still undecided, and we know about 10% of the voters are still undecided, give them this book. You can read it in two nights, and you just look at the, you know, how Trump performed and how what's happened under Kamala Harris and Joe Biden. It's like night and day. Remember how prosperous the economy was before COVID? We were like booming, and now we've had for almost 4 years of middle class Americans making no progress at all.
Yeah, and it's got to change, and Donald Trump's the man to do it. Steve Moore, thank you for being with us. And a reminder for folks to get the Trump Economic Miracle and the plan to unleash prosperity again. Highly recommended. Steve Moore, thanks for being with us again today. It's always good to talk to you.
Thanks, Annie. Have a great week.
Yep.
Take care.
You as well. Look forward to having you back next week. We're 15 days away from the election. Tomorrow is Tuesday, so 2 weeks from tomorrow is the big day. I mean, are you prepared for this? Are you ready to be on the other side of this election? That's a big question. There's hope in the moment that we have right now. There's a finality in the moment that comes after the election when those results are decided. There are questions about how whatever the other side is, the losing side, how they're going to react in this country. So we all sit on the edge of our seats and brace ourselves for impact. But the way that you can make a change in this election is still in play right now. I have the Turning Point Action app on my phone, and I've been using it to text people. I was going to go to Wisconsin. The initial time that I requested to go, they weren't accepting people in the first weekend of October, and that was the weekend that I had available. So I've been spending my weekend sending text messages to people in Wisconsin, personal text messages, like individual text messages, to low propensity voters. And you can do that as well. If you go to the Turning Point Action app, you can sign up there. You can still go to Wisconsin. You absolutely should do that 100% and get involved. And, you know, you don't have to text these people necessarily and recommend books to them, but it's important to listen to what Steve Moore is saying there. Like, if there's somebody out there right now that's maybe thinking about staying home or whatever, have the conversation now with them after the election. It's over. It's done. It is what it is. Now you can still make an impact on how the outcome of this election actually ends up unfolding. And I think it's a really important moment in time where you can make a difference. You can have an impact. And you can potentially contact somebody or go show up and work under Turning Point Action. I mean, I don't know if the process is still in play. I haven't heard that it hasn't been, but they'll put you up. They'll provide lodging for you in a hotel. They'll take care of you through the whole process. So go to Turning Point Action for more information there. When we come back, we're going to speak with Speaker Johnson, or not Speaker Johnson. We're going to speak with Lieutenant General Keith Kellogg. And here's Speaker Johnson talking about these leaked Israel plans.
Yeah, the leak is very concerning. There's some serious allegations being made there. Investigation underway, and I'll get a briefing on that in a couple of hours. There's a classified level briefing and then other, but we're following it closely. Look, I talked to my friend Bibi, Prime Minister Netanyahu, yesterday to encourage him. I mean, he's done an extraordinary job, I think, prosecuting that war. And if he had taken Joe Biden's advice, they'd be in a much weaker position right now. I think that the United States needs to stand unequivocally by our ally there right now.
So where is the next step? What is the next step in Israel's willingness to defend themselves to eliminate the terror threat that exists to the elimination of the Jewish people there in Israel? What is their next step? What is the responsibility that America has in that next step? How will America respond in support for Israel in the next step? Is there a red line of what we'll do and what we won't do? Well, I don't have any of the answers to those questions, but I do always, as usual, have a lot of questions. So we're going to bring Lieutenant General Keith Kellogg on with us in the next segment. So don't go away. Thank you to Steve Moore, who gave us a little bit of his time this afternoon. And when we come back, we'll speak with the Lieutenant General about exactly what's going on in Israel, what we know, what we hope, what we're afraid of, all of it next on the Andy Frey Show. Don't go away.
Well, 2 days ago, we took out Yahya Sinwar, the terrorist mastermind whose goons beheaded our men, raped our women, burnt babies alive. We took him out, and we're continuing our battle with Iran's other terrorist proxies. We're going to win this war.
That's Bibi Netanyahu talking about the defense that they have put up and the actions that they have taken to respond to the gross attacks that have been exacted on the people of Israel, the Jewish people there. And we wait and we see what happens next. There are reports out, specifically one here that I'm reading from CNN, that says the U.S. is investigating a leak of highly classified U.S. intelligence about Israel's plan for retaliation against Iran. According to three people familiar with the matter, one of the people familiar confirmed the document's authenticity. The leak is, quote, deeply concerning, a U.S. official told CNN. Well, let's get to the bottom of what is taking place here. We welcome back to the show Lieutenant General Keith Kellogg, a former national security advisor to the Trump administration, as well as co-chair of the Center for American Security at the America First Policy Institute. General, thank you for being with us today. It's good to have you back.
Annie, it is always good to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. I want to ask you about Bibi Netanyahu's words there. He's saying we're going to win this war. I mean, it's hard to look at what has been thrust upon Israel and not think that they are at war. They've responded. How do you feel about what Israel has done so far in response to those October 7th attacks that took place just over a year ago?
Yeah, you look at somebody like Netanyahu, and he's really become what I would call Churchillian in how he's addressed the threats in his nation's face. You know, he's fighting in, as small nation as they are, they're fighting in multiple directions. They're fighting against Hamas, they're fighting against Hezbollah, they're fighting against the Houthis, they're fighting against the Iranians, who are doing quite well. And they've done something that I thought was really kind of extraordinary. And they've got a philosophy, the Israelis do, they call it Dahiya. And what Dahiya means is disproportionate responses to an attack. And you can see that in the actions they've taken, primarily against the leadership of Hezbollah and Hamas. And they took out Sinwar just recently. They took out Haniyeh, who is the leader of Hamas when he was actually in Tehran. Then they took out Nasrallah, who's the leader of Hezbollah, and they took out his number two guy named Shukr. Plus, they took out probably 2,000 individuals of consequence using those pagers. And then they've gone after the Houthis, and then they've gone after the Iranians. And when you look at it, it's really quite remarkable what they've done. And they've done that without any great verbal support from the United States of America. You know, Kamala Harris hasn't given money support. I mean, she stiffed him, Netanyahu, when he came back here and spoke in front of a joint session of Congress. You know, Biden picked up the phone and called him the other day, but that was the first time in 50 days that he called Netanyahu. And you look at Trump, Trump actually has picked up the phone and called him twice recently. And so you kind of say, okay, this guy's kind of fighting on his own. It's an existential fight. He's doing quite well. It's doing well. And I think that because of that, he has put some level of deterrence into the Middle East that we haven't seen in a long, long time. You know, it's kind of interesting they haven't gone after Iran yet. And I think part of that is because they are kind of weighing their options. And they've got an enormous, you know, suite of options they can go after, either after they go to the Supreme Leader, they've got the nuke sites, they've got the industrial facilities, whatever it is. But when it comes to, and I'll close the circle, when it comes right down to it, you've got a leader in Israel who is defending his nation, but his popularity's gone way, way up. And he's kind of basically said to everybody, you're not going to attack our people and get away with it. Mm-hmm. And what's happened on 7 October over a year ago, and he's right.
We're speaking with Lieutenant General Keith Kellogg. I want to ask you about the when they got Sinwar. Some people were saying, like, well, this is an important moment. There, you can go one way with this, you can go another. Is there a bigger potential for peace after Sinwar, the Hamas leader, was taken out? And, of course, that's the hope for everyone. But you'd have to have both parties in that area, in that region, in those two organizations agree to have peace. Do you feel as though Israel is in a position to negotiate that peace now in a stronger way? Or do you feel like there is still more aggression that will come from Israel in order to make that case completely clear?
Yeah, I think there's an opportunity here. But it would take the United States to get involved. And by the way, Annie, I don't think they will, because I don't think they've got the legs to do it in a short period of time. But right now you've got Hamas still talking about, oh, well, you know, we're going to put an individual in charge. We're still fighting. You know, really, they're on their back foot. They're really hurting. Here's how you'd have to do that. It would take the United States of America to kind of pick up the phone and call the people who are aligned a little bit with Hamas in the region, like Qatar. And you pick up the phone and you call Al-Thani, the sheikh there, and you say, look, this is what's going on. We need your help to do it. We need the Saudis' help to do it as well. Well, the problem is they've lost all this ability to communicate. For example, Harris has got no relationship at all with Mohammed bin Salman, the crown prince of Saudi Arabia, and neither does Biden. And they're going to be absolutely key to this whole thing because of the economic piece. They're kind of the money bags for the region. They, the Saudis, are. And there's no ability to reach out to them. So there's an opportunity if you have reach out, but the United States would have to do it, but they don't have the capacity or credibility to do so right now. And the fear of the Hamas is they're just going to replace Sinwar with somebody else who's another hardliner, like his son, who's also a hardliner. And people need to understand, and this is where the United States has to play a hard role, meaning, you know, make the hard calls. You tell Hamas, you tell Palestinians, until you bring somebody in here who's reasonable to do this, there's no such thing as a two-state solution. None, zero, right at all. And people need to understand the possibility of that happening in the near term is not there. In other words, a Palestinian state. Because it's going to take a long time to bring the Palestinians back on board. I remind everybody that it took the United States of America, the southern states of the United States, after the Civil War, 11 years to reintegrate the Union with the North, with the Union. It took Germany and Japan probably 11 to 12 years to reunite with the normal world after World War II. This thing is not going to go away overnight. The Israelis are just not going to turn it off right away. They're not, because they're so grieved by this, as rightfully they should be. So it's going to take the United States to play, and I don't think they are. So the bad news, the good news is there an opportunity? Yes. Is it going to happen? The answer is no, because the people that will have to be the broker in this is the United States, and they'd have to be a broker with the Saudis and the Qataris and people like that. And this administration doesn't have the legs. First of all, it doesn't have the time to do it because they're running out of airspeed and altitude with the election coming up. And Harris has got no relationships at all in the Middle East at all, none, zero. So is there an opportunity? Yes. Is it going to happen? No.
Yeah.
Are you going to keep the fighting going? In all probability, yes, until they come up with a reasonable solution that Hamas is not going to be running the government in Gaza and the Palestinians are going to have to pick up a different leader. I don't think they will in the short term. So that's, you know, there's good news and bad news, and you got both.
Yeah, it sounds like chaos continues to reign supreme on the opposition to Israel. You're talking about Kamala Harris's ability to negotiate in that region, meaningfully negotiate. I'm trying to think of a time where she's been asked a question or had the opportunity to speak on this issue where it hasn't just, you know, kind of been like, we want peace, we'd like a ceasefire, hopeful two-state solution, you know, some positive things about American support for Israel, but nothing that really has teeth. And I'm wondering, should Donald Trump win this election? He's boastfully talked about both the Ukraine conflict with Russia and the Middle East conflict, that he would be able to have great impact on both of those conflicts before he is even inaugurated. Does that have to do with the gravitas that he brings just from what he's already done in the first term? How does he feel so confident that he can have that much influence on these conflicts an ocean away?
Well, the reason he can do that is because, well, one, he's got a track record. But the second is, when you are in transition, and let's say it could happen the 6th or 7th of November, whenever they call the election, then you start making pronouncements and you start doing things. And everybody shifts their thinking. They move from the previous administration to a new administration in transition. And he's got the ability to do that. And the reason he's got that ability to do it is there's one thing that Donald Trump has that Harris doesn't have and Biden hasn't. You know, one sliver right there. Remember, Biden hasn't talked to Putin in over 2 years. So Trump has always had the ability to connect with leaders. He picks up the phone and calls anybody. I mean, he will talk to anybody. I mean, look at what happened this weekend at McDonald's. He'll go talk to people. He feels good about it. He does that with leaders. That's a very key quality of leadership, is the ability to reach out to friends and adversaries as well. And he will do that immediately. He'll start talking to people, and leaders will start calling him immediately. That's how it works when you have a change of government. And he'll start saying things immediately. This is what he wants to do. And that will keep people say, okay, this is where he wants to go. And they're not going to start changing their attitudes on the 20th of January. They will start changing their attitudes on the 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th of November, because they're going to say, okay, this guy's coming in. So if you've got that ability, that quality, to be able to talk to foreign leaders, which Trump has shown in 4 years of governance, plus the way he is just as a person, and that Biden does not have, and Harris hasn't shown she's got an ability to do it, that's where you start to see the changes. And I've been asked that question before. I said, no, change can start occurring almost immediately. The people say, but I want to get on the wrong side.
Yeah.
This is what I want to do. And they will reach out to him. So it's not even very subtle at all. It's actually how the world actually works. Mm-hmm. So can he do it? The answer is yeah. And he will start making pronouncements. People are going to say, well, I'm going to be dealing with this guy for 4 years. How do we do it? And that's the reason why I think he's got an enormous advantage. If he didn't have that personality, that he couldn't do that or wouldn't do that, or have the capacity to do it, it's a different story. But we all know who he is. We all know how he operates. We all saw him, how he operated with foreign leaders. And he would, it's just his DNA.
Yeah.
And that's an incredible advantage.
And they know, too. The people who are right. in these foreign countries, they certainly do as well. Touching on that CNN article I was reading about this leak of highly classified U.S. intelligence about Israel's plan for retaliation against Iran. To me, I'm looking for the teeth in this story, and I'm wondering if this is just, getting ahead of some sort of news report that might be coming out. But when you hear about these quote unquote leaked documents that suggest that there are Israeli plans for an attack, a retaliation attack against Iran, what are your thoughts as Lieutenant General? How do you feel about what this leak might entail?
Well, to start with, they ought to have an investigation to find out if there was in fact a leak, and that didn't happen. Now, here's one thing I would be surprised about. I would be shocked, however, if the Israelis told us anything about any attack plans, because they don't trust us. They don't trust this administration. And they might say, yeah, we're going to attack in the north when really they're going to attack in the south type deal. But I don't know if they would have given us it. But if they did, and that's always concerning, and those were in fact leaked, and you can probably run the trap lines of where that information was, because when it comes to sensitive information like that, that is only given to certain organizations within the government and certain people within the government, and they can probably track that down. But, man, I will tell you, I put everybody that is involved in that on a polygraph in a heartbeat and say, we're going to try to find out what actually happened, because you've got to send a message internally.
Does that happen? On a polygraph to figure out who – is that something that legit happens, to figure out who the leaker would be?
It could happen, because when you've got the high-level clearances, they call it departments – when you've got an SCI ability, you are subject to polygraph at any time.
Wow.
Because that's basically the most senior and most significant documents that are there. And that's the reason when they call it TSs, and top secret TSSCI, top secret special compartmented information. When you go to the SCI level, that's well above TS. That's really compartment. And you say to people, no, if you've got an ability to touch the SCI data, then you are subject to a polygraph. See, that's the reason I say I'd check that out. But there's two parts to the story. One is check it out and find out if it's true. But the second is, it's like the Israelis really don't trust us really well. And I don't blame them
right.
at all. I wouldn't tell us anything at all. And if I did tell us, I'd tell us just the opposite of what I was going to do. So it's one of those I'd find out being invented. And because we have shown quite well that we are not in their camp, full score. You know, and what I mean by that is we've had great opportunity to say we are with the Israelis full up, and we haven't done it. Now, we haven't given them equipment yet, but it's been slow in coming. But we've made comments to them that we're kind of saying, well, we kind of want to be, equal-footed on this, support them. We support Hamas and the Palestinians, support the Israelis. No. You say full up, we support the Israelis. That's what... Richard Nixon in 1973, after the Yom Kippur War, when at the third day of the fighting going on there, the Israelis were really concerned they were going to lose this fight. And so what President Nixon did, President Nixon basically called in his military and said, everything that has an airplane that can fly to Israel, you load up with equipment and send it to them. And they did that. And the Russians came out and said, well, we may have to get involved in this. And boy, Nixon went right back and said, we are now raising our defense condition, which is a real signal. When you raise your what's called a DEFCON, defense condition. Mm-hmm. When you raise the DEFCON, it sends a real signal, we're getting ready for a fight. And he raised the DEFCON and told the Russians, okay, fine, this is what we're going to do. And the Russians said, on second thought, we're not going to do anything. And that's how you kind of have to handle it.
Yeah.
But this administration hasn't done it.
So much gamesmanship.
Oh, absolutely. But that's what part of politics is.
Yeah. I wanted to, before we let you go, we're respectful of your time, Lieutenant General Keith Kellogg with you. I couldn't pass up the opportunity to share one of your most recent posts on X with a picture of Donald Trump hanging out of a drive-thru window at a McDonald's. It's an amazing photograph. And you posted, it is said a picture is worth 1,000 words. Donald Trump serving fries and welcoming people at a McDonald's drive-thru from fight, fight, fight after getting shot at a rally to this. This is the real Donald Trump I know. You know this man personally. You have worked mm-hmm. with him. You've been with him. Do you think that America is starting to understand who Donald Trump really is as a human being more than they have in the years leading up to this election?
You know, Annie, I really hope so, because, you know, I've been with President Trump since 2015. And I can't even really love the guy, because the guy, you know, is so, he's so great. He loves America so much, and you don't see it. Well, I got to give you one anecdote, because it's kind of funny. I'm during the middle of COVID. I remember I walked in the Oval Office with him, and we were sitting around and kept talking. And he looked at me, and we just kind of, you know, kind of casually said, he goes, you know, he said, just like this, I just want Americans to get better. And I said, sir, stop it right there. You go out right now, go down to the press room, and you say just that. He goes, no, that shows weakness. Oh, God. So it's, you know, his public persona is so different than his private persona. And people will tell you that. You know, he's good hearted. He's got an incredible sense of humor. He's incredibly gracious with his time and what he is and who he is and what he has done. And I, you know, there's so much written about him that the way he is. I'm just telling you, my daughter once said, Dad, you ought to write a book one of these days and write the book Behind Closed Doors, because I saw what he's like as a human being. You know, here's the, and I'll say this to you and to your audience, because it's one of those things you think about. You know, you look at Donald J. Trump as a family man, and he's been married 3 times. Donna's passed away. But all 3 of his wives adore him. And then he's got 5 children, 1 from each one of the marriages, including most recently Barron with Melania. The kids all adore him, and he treats them incredibly well. And look at what they look like. Look how they, you know, posture themselves. That's part of parenting.
Yes.
And you and parents out there know it. And said, you tell me, what families are like that? Even the Reagan family wasn't like that. You know, Michael Reagan wasn't a big fan at all. You know, even his dad. So I say, you kind of look a little bit and back up a little bit and look at the man and say, am I missing something here? Because I think they are. And I'm just hoping when you see from, and that, what I saw him looking out the window with that big grin, I said, that's the Donald Trump I know. And then when he got shot and he stood up and yelled, fight, and, you know, said, fight, 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 that's the Donald Trump I know. And that's the reason why I tell people, I'm with him. I've been with him. I've seen him. I've seen the personal levels that I've been in, and I've seen what he believes with his military, men and women in military. And I just tell people, I said, that's what I see. That's what I know. And it's, you know, and I understand it's a personal level, but I just really believe in him. And I think he'd be great for America. I really do. Again.
Well, that's real. And that's the stories, the anecdotes that people want to hear. Larry is listening to us, watching us on YouTube, and he said he'd read that book. So if you read it, Larry's going to be first. Or if you write it, Larry's going to be first in line to get it and hear those stories from behind closed doors. Lieutenant General Keith Kellogg, it's always such an honor and pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you for the time again today. We're really grateful for it.
Thanks, Annie. Thanks for having me.
Of course. We'll do it again soon. Thank you so much. Lieutenant General Keith Kellogg, the former National Security Advisor to Donald Trump. He's also the co-chair of the Center for American Security at America First Policy Institute. Check him out on X at General Kellogg. That's where you can see that post. I mean, the picture of Donald Trump. Whoever snapped that picture, just chef's kiss. Same as the photo, the fight, fight, fight photo with the right after the shot, after President Trump was shot, and he's got his fist in the air and the American flag is blowing in the background. He's got blood on his face. I mean, those are moments that happen. There are moments like that that happen all the time. When you're able to capture it in a photograph, boy, you can change the course of history with an image like that. And I think the McDonald's one out the drive-thru, it's one of those photos. Quick break. When we come back, let's revisit the YouTube live chat poll. Do you approve of Trump's McDonald's stop? Yes or no? You got to tell us on the Annie Fry YouTube channel. Go vote in the live chat poll. Back in a minute.
We have worked at McDonald's now versus...
Now I have worked at McDonald's. I've now worked for 15 minutes more than Kamala.
Are you going to put this on your resume?
She never worked here.
Why don't you lie about something?
15 minutes more than Kamala.
So will be put on your resume?
Worked at McDonald's.
Why would she lie about that?
Why? Because she's lying, Kamala. That's why. Why would she lie? She shouldn't lie about it. McDonald's confirmed 4 times now. She never worked here. But let's not talk about that. It's an amazing business. It's an amazing country. And we're going to make America greater than ever before.
President Trump from the drive-through window at the end of this campaign stop. That's what it was. At the end of this campaign stop, he says, OK, a couple more questions. And then he has to go, and he finishes the press conference and he turns it around and he's like, well, that's a really bizarre place to do a press conference. I just thought that's very true. He's hanging out the drive-thru window in a apron after he handed out like a dozen servings of French fries, answering questions of the press. He was even like, get these press some French fries. Can we send these out? And I was just like, you can tell that they're not sending him out there going, first you're going to say this, and then you're going to say that, and then after this person asks this question, you're going to give this response. It's all him. Love him or hate him, it's Trump. The YouTube live chat poll for today is, do you approve of Trump's McDonald's stop, yes or no? The votes are coming in. We've got 276 votes in right now. You need to let us know what you think about it. I'm going to read, let's see here. Game said, I wish he would have went to Subway. McDonald's is too easy. Subway. RSG said, Trump at McDonald's is like a Norman Rockwell painting moment. I've seen that multiple times. Tom said, weird question. I'm ambivalent towards photo ops. Trump, air quotes, worked at that McD's as much as Paul Ryan washed dishes at a closed soup kitchen. So Tom says no. Brad, did you like that he stopped at McDonald's?
I loved that he stopped at McDonald's. You said it so many times, and his biggest enemy is the caricature that has been painted of him. And every time Trump is among the people, he looks more and more human, he looks more and more relatable, and he looks more and more likable. And this situation was no different. He was able to go in there and soften his image. You don't see the big, scary monster whenever he's, you know, scooping fries into the little carton.
No, he was funny. Oh, gosh. I like the way Ethan said it in the very first segment of the show. He said it was fun. And in a super tight and tense race like it is right now, folks, I've been talking about the election being so many days away when it was in the 500s. I've had a countdown on my phone. If you've been listening to the show for a while, you've been hearing me count down over and over again this many days to the election. Well, I'm here to tell you.
Get more at 971talk.com.